Hello and welcome to the Dancecast, where I explore dance as an art form, traveling to non-traditional places and with non-traditional doers. I'm your host and my name is Silva Lakkonen. Welcome to Dancecast episode 15. In this series, I've been talking to people who create their work in a challenging environment or about challenging issues. And this is the last episode in that series. And in this episode, I talked to Liv, who has been working, creating her own work about death. But here's a little bit more about Liv. She is a multidisciplinary artist and educator based in the Bay Area. Liv graduated from Alonzo King Lines Ballet BFA program at Dominican University of California in 2013 and spent the 2013-15 seasons dancing with Danceworks Chicago under direction of Julie Nakagawa. Liv embraces employment opportunity nationwide, developing integrative arts curriculum, educating dancers, performing and creating choreographic commissions with organizations such as Youth Art Exchange, Jacob Spillow Curriculum in Motion, the Juntos Collective, Western Michigan University, Southern Exposure, and Alonzo King Lines Ballet BFA and Summer Programs. You can currently spot Liv dancing with Axis Dance Company, where she joined in August of 2016. Here is Liv. So nice to have you in Dancecast.
So nice to be here.
We met at Axis a year ago.
Yeah, the summer intensive.
Yeah. You were auditioning and then ended up being a dancer for Axis, right?
I did, yeah.
How has your first year with Axis been?
It's been good. It was kind of an unexpected join. I was really looking at the audition and the workshop as a professional development option. I was doing a lot of teaching and doing a lot of teaching to non-vocationally trained dancers, and I was coming across some students with some developmental disabilities, and so when I heard about the audition for Axis, I thought it would be a good time to sponge in some info, some tools, and upon being offered the position, I was making a hard choice between this call inside of me to be an educator and then also sort of step back into more of a performance realm, which is where I had been with my work in Chicago a couple years prior.
So yeah, I was reading your bio and you have done a lot of work as an educator.
Yeah.
can you tell me more about it? It was really interesting.
Well, here in San Francisco, when I arrived back in 2015, I did some work with an organization called Youth Art Exchange, which is free art classes for public high school students. And I was on their dance faculty, and so I was just sort of creating my own curriculum. It included a lot of hip-hop, which is actually a style that I wasn't even trained in, but I was just utilizing, you know, natural rhythm and sort of YouTube videos and taking classes in the area to really bring that, because that was a style the students really wanted, you know? So how did I demand that of myself? Other than Youth Art Exchange, I've always taught at a lot of studios all around the area. I was teaching at Dance Mission and some San Jose dance studios when I came back to the Bay. And I also teach for Jacob Spillow Curriculum in Motion program, which is a program in which we go into high schools, actually all kinds of schools in the Berkshires, but I'm employed for the high school residency, where we team up with some classroom teachers and we make kinesthetic curriculum for academic lesson planning.
What was the program called?
Jacob Spillow, Curriculum in Motion.
So I teach an exactly the same, but for pre-K and K, but awesome. We call it Learning in Motion.
Oh, awesome.
But it is taking academic subject and making a kinesthetic experience to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating to me and so stimulating for me to just think about dance is a tool in that way, and it always feels it always feels like such a rewarding success when students get something via a movement exercise and you're like, yes,
I know. And you know, I always say this because I come from Finland, which the education is supposed to be like the top notch. I mean, it is the top notch, of course, but I still came out of that system thinking that I wasn't academically very good. I was kind of stupid. But now when I teach this program, I'm like, gosh, if somebody would have taught me math the way I'm teaching these kids, I think I would have been, like, my whole mindset would have been so totally different. The way I would have approached it, the way I would have felt about my ability to get it, like, just, I am so, it is very rewarding work because I feel like I could have benefited it from myself so much.
Yeah. And the soft skills are really quite important, especially the ones that I'm observing in high school students of, you know, these are girls who are going through puberty and thinking maybe about a sexual self for the first time ever, and having a tool like movement to orient them to their bodies outside of that arena,
yeah,
I think is a little helpful so that they feel more comfortable.
Yeah. How did you, by the way, start dancing? How did you end up become a dancer?
You know, when I was really little, yeah, dance worker. I like that title, dance worker. When I was really young, my mom put me in classes at our local park district, our local sort of community center. And it was just creative movement for tots sort of thing, you know, like three-year-olds running around in Walmart tutus sort of situation. And it was great. I mean, I don't have any memory of it, but I remember my mom telling me that I had a certain focus that seemed pretty impenetrable, and I kept wanting to continue. So then she took me to a competition studio, and then again, I felt very focused and wanted to continue. And so then she put me into a more prestigious ballet school. And then when it came time, I remember when I was 14, I think I really understood that maybe ballet wasn't the thing. I had always felt a draw to a certain artistic side. I had always kind of felt like a black sheep in the ballet world. And, you know, I was a little thicker. I was a little more boisterous. I just had, you know, some kind of rebellious qualities somewhere in me, I guess. I knew that maybe contemporary or modern would be a good thing. I was growing up outside of Chicago, and my mom used to take me to a ton of performances. And I remember seeing Hubbard and Giordano and River North as I was growing up. And I think that really influenced the style that I wanted to get into. And then I went to a summer program at Alonzo King Lines Ballet when I was 15 and fell in love with the Bay Area and with contemporary dance and with the philosophy at Lines. And then when it came time post high school to pick a program to go to study 4 years, I was like, well, I had a great time over one summer. I don't see why I wouldn't have a great time for 4 years. And so I studied here in the Bay Area, which is how I'm here. Lines has actually brought me here. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I always love hearing about people's history, how did they end up becoming dance workers.
Yeah.
Because it's fascinating. And, you know, it's often, you think that it's so similar, but it isn't really.
Yeah.
It isn't. I mean, there are, like, my mom was the same way. She's like, oh, Silva has a lot of energy. I just put her in a ballet class. And I thought for 16 years, you know, oh, I'm becoming a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
And then I realized, no, I actually will never become a ballet dancer. And got introduced to creative movement and dance improvisation and contemporary. And then I was like, yeah, this could be it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, ballet seems to fit a lot of entry points for a lot of people, which is really beautiful because it has such a solid, dependable technique. And it, of course, has a lot of discipline. But then that transition moment when people are like, is this me?
Yeah.
Or is this just sort of where I landed? Is quite interesting where people go from there, for sure.
Yeah. And so now you're working with Axis and you're still creating your own work as well.
I am.
So tell me a little bit about, it's a duet or a video or a video and a duet or I see all kinds of interesting things online, so.
You know, it is all sorts of interesting things. The video and the duet are two performative or presentational aspects of this sort of project title that I'm using right now, which is called Dedication, that I'm spelling D-E-A-D-I-C-A-T-I-O-N. So the emphasis on the dead.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And it is in the works, and it is very new. I'm just sort of starting to churn the wheels on it. But it began with a series of improvisational movement studies in cemeteries nationwide.
Oh, okay.
And I wanted to do a few things with that. I wanted to improvise because I think just like every other kind of dance, that's a practice and a muscle that I just wanted to keep, really available for myself. And I also wanted to make films out of it because I do really see film and videography and sort of its relationship to technology, obviously, as part of a real hefty future of the dance world. And I wanted to create a practice for myself, a way to edit videos on a regular basis to just exercise that muscle also and get involved and learn about the software and learn about other skills and tips that videographers and cinematographers use so that I could stay relevant really as I continue to make work. And that sort of evolved then from these video episodes to, how do I bring this into a performance or a live scenario? And what does that really do to the concept of the work? There's something sort of interesting about time displacement in relationship to death and cemeteries that are sort of these space holds of time, these bodies, these memories that literally have, 1906 to 1989 written on the tombstone. And a video that's sort of like, I can pass it all around the world and people could watch it at many different times. On the contrary, a performance is sort of like a one-time, event that has a very specific time that you need to be present for. So that has turned into a couple of things, facilitating some conversations on death while I talk about my inquiry around death, some sort of improvisational performances to songs that people have volunteered as songs that they want played at their funerals.
Oh, wow.
A couple of showings of some of the videos that I've worked on of my improv. And most recently, I have choreographed a small duet with Julie, who is my collaborator on that most recent film episode. And we have sort of live moments that we coincide with the film presented.
Oh, okay. I see. Yeah. I see. And then why death? Why did you choose death?
I have a pretty intimate relationship. With death.
If it's something you don't want to talk about, I totally understand.
Hey, I feel really comfortable talking about it. Thank you for that sensitivity, though. I have actually lost both of my parents to cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. And it has really helped the process. It's been about 7 years since my dad passed and 3 since my mom. And the process has sort of been hidden within me, sort of this creative digestion and artistic expression of death. And now it feels really ready to come out. And it's unearthing more appreciation for the light that really exists in experiencing death. It is obviously a dark, dark place to be. But there's a lot of beauty in the lessons that death offers about how to live life and how to show up and how to prioritize each other, really, instead of things. And I want to lean into that. I want to fuse my artistic world and I want to fuse that with my personal experience with death because it keeps me on track. I don't get tempted by the hamster wheel of being the best or getting notoriety or, you know, sort of climbing the ladder of fame and success. I actually just stay rooted to the idea of like just making important work that is authentic, and that is enough.
You know, I watched your videos and I have to say that I didn't think that you had such a close personal relationship with it, because it doesn't seem like this therapeutic thing. Mm. It probably is, but for as an observer, I can watch it without feeling like, oh, this is too much. Which is sometimes when you make dances in about these very strong issues, I feel like you put a lot on the viewer and observer. But with your work, I actually now even appreciate it more, because it just makes me think and, you know, makes me wonder death, and but it doesn't put me into this being your therapist role.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that. That is definitely intentional. I think maybe that comes from my own experience as a young college kid, really going through death and feeling the tumultuous relationship of wanting to be supported by my friends and community, and having a lot of resentment and anger about my situation, you know, closer to when it was happening. And how eventually through my own journey, I've learned that it's no one's fault really when people are unable to show up to support you as friends in those moments of hardship. You know, everybody has their own entrance and experience and availability to really receive and support these kinds of situations in their lives. And culturally, we push it away. So it is not one, you know, person's responsibility to be there for you. And I think losing both of my parents, my biggest lesson came from a place of they were the two supporters of my unconditional love. And when those plugs are pulled and the outlet is no longer receiving energy from that source, you know, where do I get that unconditional love? And ultimately, it comes down to noticing the moments of unconditional love in small interactions of kindness and people, but also from a lot of self-generation, a lot of self-love. And learning that responsibility and accountability took my desire away from wanting people to feel what I felt going through my experience, and instead just saying, hey, let's talk about it. Let's just bring it to a place where it can happen. And this is ultimately something that will happen to everyone.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? What does that mean about each day? Yeah.
And is that hospice care thing part of your research for your artistic work, or is that something that you want to do separate from this? I mean, I guess they all, I mean, it's you going to these places, so it's not ever separate. But
both. I mean, I think that's what you're saying. This project for me is kind of both in all ways. And right now, this is the very beginning of my involvement with hospice. I just finished some hospice volunteer training with Continuum Care Hospice, and I've been attending a few events at the Zen Hospice Center in San Francisco, or Zen Hospice Project. And I really am interested in finding a way to develop a curriculum, a movement curriculum for the dying and for hospice staff and for their families. And I don't have a full picture of what that looks like yet, but I'm really just starting to get those conversations going. And I'm interested in creating this, that experience when you're dancing, that feeling of flying, that feeling of spirit, you know, that really gets illuminated while dancing. All dancers know this.
Yeah.
How can we give that to families who are grieving, or, you know, nurses or caregivers that are working in a heavy arena, or to patients who really could utilize that enhancement of spirit as a way to help navigate a transition between realms. You know, it's something that could be a big tool in this arena that I think is so far, in my experience, has been underutilized, you know. And so I think one of the reasons I'm here, maybe, or just something I'm curious about exploring right now, is let's see how we can use them together.
That's, you know, I had a loss in my family this February, and it was I have never experienced death like I did my father-in-law's, and I basically watched him go. Like, yeah. He woke up at 6 a.m., said, "I'm done. I want to die. I want to die today." And he was announced dead 11:04 a.m. And I watched it, and I couldn't believe, like, seeing the body and the mind connection. He was very, very smart man, and was very, you know, had no, like, issues on, like, cognitive decline or anything like that for his age, but his body was done. And once his mind said, "I'm gonna go," he just went.
Mm.
And that has been super powerful experience for me. I mean, it was so unreal to me that I had to, like, go and, like, ask physicians, how did this even happen? How could somebody just decide it like that? And I haven't even thought about going and, like, moving my own body. But now when you were talking about it, I was like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. Like, I need that peace with it. And I think that would be a perfect way to do it. So I definitely want to keep hearing about your work in that area. And because, it was just a very strong experience to me to see it just happening in front of my eyes. So,
yeah, that's a gift that he shared with you and whoever else was with you in those hours, really, to be there through all of it. It's a beautiful experience.
Yeah. I hope I can see it like that one day. Now it's still just, like, too intense, actually, to, like, to deal with.
Yeah.
But I can see the benefit of, like, movement for me, who deals with everything anyway by moving my body. And but, like, there is something so stigmatized about death that hasn't even occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so, like, worried that it's going to be ugly. I don't know. Not even that. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But it's funny that I haven't even thought about it. Just going to a studio and move that experience out of my system.
Uh-huh.
Or not out of, but maybe to another place where I can deal with it better or more or easily.
Yeah. That what you said brings up more questions about time for me. When you had said maybe someday I'll think of it that way, and now it feels hard. When is the appropriate time for this kind of work? I'm not sure really that there is a codified answer to that question. Maybe it's different person to person. And I think that's something that I like about it. I like artistic practices that have a lot of trust and sort of leeway and listening involved in how they evolve. And partnering with death, you have to take on that flexibility of maybe this is a way to do it, or maybe this is a way to do it. And there's really no room to get stuck or attached to one process or one timeline or one form. Option. One form. So thank you. That's interesting to think about. I wonder about, for me, how to open this work up to other people, other artists, you know, other people who are interested in digesting in such a way. I took a group of dancers who work for an organization where they are actually volunteers at this moment. They're students. And the organization is called the Juntos Collective. And it is a dance exchange between dancers here in the States with students from dance conservatories, as well as an exchange with Central American communities, underserved communities in Central America. And I recently took 8 of those students to a cemetery and kind of said, okay, this is the first time I'm doing this with, you know, sort of with a group, and I'm learning how to expand the process to others, to have it reach others. And we generated some phrases in relationship to the space, in response to the space, had some sort of checkpoint conversations. And then we took a lot of that research back into the studio with us, where we sort of formulated a piece that they would then perform on a trip to Central America during some outreach performances.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was a good first step. I gave them some improvisational tasks to think about when they were moving in the cemetery. And it was a nice contrast to when I had Julie and I, the dance film girl, in the cemetery together, and we had sort of worked in the opposite way, where we went and we started by making a few moves in a studio and then took it into the cemetery. And there was something too contrived for me feeling when I was in that moment, I was thinking about, I had put thought into what we were wearing and what we would do in the cemetery. I'd had these visions, and because I worked that way, it wasn't in alignment so much with the flexibility and listening about death. And I learned that and then tried going the opposite way with bringing these students in. And yeah, I guess it's all forever evolving. It's a new exploration for me that I want to lean into, sort of look at the monsters under my bed. You know, it's a thing in my life that I could ignore and push away for so long and just sort of keep going on the grind, or I could really stop and go like, hey, what you doing under there? Let's just put it on the table and have a conversation. But it's tricky to involve other people also, because then it crosses territory about what people are or are not, you know, comfortable volunteering information about themselves or engaging that information in a creative process. And that requires a level of trust and a level of tenderness that I hope could have some sort of effect, sort of domino effect into other parts of the dance world, really, that other leaders or people at the front of different rooms in the dance community could utilize as that trust and tenderness, for sure.
For sure. Do you have like a hope, like a future hope, how this would look? Do you have like in 10 years, I wish that?
I don't know. In 10 years, in 10 years, I wish to have a codified movement curriculum. See, then I can't even be codified. Predicting myself. I hope to have a codified but lucid movement curriculum that is available through many different hospice organizations for many different families and staff and patients. I hope that the presentation of this work in its many forms gets people of all walks of life just thinking about death and mortality in a way that feels manageable, that feels appropriate, that feels like it's a good portion that they can bite off and chew, you know? And I hope that it also in 10 years and in even further years, I hope that other artists that are like me, or just other young emerging artists, start to think about the innovative ways they can tie together, connect the dots in all of their parts of their lives to really pull forth opportunities like this, sort of to tap into inner inventors and start innovating and carving their own paths for things like this, because I hope that communicating this kind of work, I'm representing a way of self that's like just my truest self. It's like live in pure form. And I think I love seeing other people when they're in that form also. So I would love that it would inspire people to do the same. For sure.
I'm so happy to hear. Oh, it gives me lots of hope towards the future education of dance artist, because I still think we are very educating to a very narrow dance field that is old-fashioned, and we need to educate people towards this kind of dance field where you realize that everything and anything is part of that work, and not just that you go and dance for somebody, and that the dance field is actually much wider than you thought that it was, or that your education actually prepared you to realize already how big it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Definitely.
Oh, wow. So is there any other future live dreams? Or it sounds like you're doing a lot. Like every person that I talk to, I'm like, how do you make this all happen?
Coffee. I am doing a lot. Yeah, I've always been a hustler. I think, you know, the future of me really is just about pursuing happiness. I think, you know, there are a lot of really ways to get sucked into being career driven in all kinds of careers. And I think what makes me happy is making and sharing work. So as many opportunities as possible all over that I have to do that would, of course, be ideal, with as many different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. Also, the future of Live includes, you know, really listening to mentors and to the people who have come before me, because I am very, very early on in this world. And I've had really great experiences that have helped to line me up for a career and for a path. But I know that there is still so much to learn. And so I hope that the future Live includes tight-knit, intimate mentor relationships that I feel really comfortable with, and also that ties in and feeds me in a way where, you know, without parents, you know, what I look for is a mentor that I can trust. And it's not so much a replacing of a relationship, but it's just identifying those places I can feel support and guidance and honesty, which is what my parents would have given me. Then I think future Liv would, beyond that, like to be a mentor herself and like to continue to educate and teach and guide others along the way, for sure.
Well, you can just take that off. You're my mentor already, so.
Ah, shucks.
One goal reached.
It is a reciprocal street, two-way street, you know. You're doing something that you facilitated a platform for people to come together, that you are doing what you just said you wish the people in the dance world would do. You know, you're doing that, and I think, you know, we all really need each other, which is something to keep in mind, all of us, that we have to work together.
I mean, you got to practice what you preach. Hell yeah. Do not preach if you don't practice it, like. That does not fly with me. So, it was so nice to talk with you. I'm so looking forward to seeing what you cook up. And I feel like I say that after each episode. But I think I'm just so privileged to talk with amazing people. And I truly mean it. Like, each one of you's futures, I cannot wait to see what it is.
Thank you, Silva. Really appreciate that.